This is the moment many wait for.
The most entertaining.
A man of wisdom. A man of experience, Dave.
The most informative.
To bring light to a dark subject. To bring positivity to a negative world.
The incredible Paul Moyer.
Moyer out, you losers.
Feels like it's been a minute since we've had a chance to catch up with Paul Moyer, who is now with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And I would imagine Paul is very, very fired up for opening day. Am I right about that, Paul?
I'm very fired up. And I feel honored to be sandwiched between the great Kevin Martinez, Jerry DePoto, and you got Dave Sims after me, then Logan Gilbert. So wow. I'm in awe of the people that were before and after. So yeah, I'm excited.
Would you send him our lineup today, Lefko? Is that what happened?
It's public knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Tweet it out. So let people know what's coming up. It's on the tweeter, Dave.
There we go.
Some of us have an X account. And by the way, what it does look like, who has Jerry DePoto and Logan Gilbert has something in common. They don't have an X account. So
wise.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Definitely well, what wise. Is the group chat fired up yet, or does that only happen when the game starts?
Oh no, that was at 5 a.m. was the first text, and there was a meme that was of Julio with the Triton one. So no, it's been full on all day. And I said, hey, by the way, we're probably going to talk about you guys. What's your predictions? And my one good friend said, I'll probably be the negative one. And even his negative group text was, well, they'll probably get the wild card spot, definitely make the playoffs, win tonight 4-3. I go, I'm in. I go, if that's negative, let's go. So, yeah, this town's pretty pumped up. A lot of Mariner jerseys and paraphernalia walking around Seattle today.
Yeah, we've got new hats down here. And just to clarify, your little text group is called the Abandoned Boys. Is that right?
We're called the Abandoned Boys because we
abandoned. I'm sorry, abandoned. I guess because you've ignored me.
No. And Bob, I've been texting Bob lately, but I've got no response. But then I found out maybe he's had phone issues yesterday.
You have not texted me, have you?
No, I thought I would just use that as. Because I heard you yesterday talking about you were having phone issues and maybe you need a new one. So
yeah,
I thought I'd pile on for you.
That felt too real right there, Paul. I was on the phone for over an hour with T-Mobile last night, but we'll move on from that. But I'm thinking Dave is happy he's not a part of that group. As you said, the text started coming in at 5 a.m. So I would think that's something he doesn't want to be a part of.
I was going to bed. At that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I text Dave in the morning, I usually get a response when he's getting up around 11:30. So, no, he would miss a few texts.
How about Ty France at number 8 in the Mariners lineup? I guess, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, it looks like tomorrow it's going to be 5th, maybe. Anyway, I expect him to climb, but it just seemed like kind of a boost a little bit that you had that kind of a spring. You got Jorge Polanco in the 3 spot, Mitch Garver, Cal Raleigh, Haniger, Canzone, then France, then Rojas. What do you think?
I'm just looking at the lineup as you were reading that. I mean, first of all, if they have Haniger 6, I mean, think about our lineup last year, guys, after the 5th spot. Yeah. I mean, it was slim pickings, that, you know, the bottom 3. And look, I like Rojas. I mean, he's got a beautiful swing. It is a thing of beauty. And, you know, you have France, who's, you know, as you mentioned, 8th, who used to be our 3rd, 4th hitter. I'm hoping he climbs, but at the same time, you got to earn it, right? I mean, go have the kind of year you had a couple of years ago. This is a stacked lineup. I mean, it's one, and I think we saw it the last 10 games of spring when they started having a little more consistency in the lineup and scoring runs. And, you know, you're not seeing double-digit strikeouts, you know, 10, 11 strikeouts for the team. It's just going to be very different. We know that. I just think 2 months ago we were all jumping off the bandwagon, and now I'm about as excited as I've ever been.
So what is your expectation? You talked about your friend that thought you pictured as being negative, thinking they're going to be a wild card team. So you're not that negative. What's your feeling? What's your prediction for the season?
I'm always hopeful. We missed it by two games last year, and we're a better team this year. We get our bullpen completely healthy. I mean, this is a very difficult lineup and a team that is going to, I think, be problems for everybody else. You know, I'm 90-plus wins right now with what we have on paper. I get it. Look, our division's tough, the Rangers and Houston, but I just think Texas is going to come back to the pack. I mean, they got hot at the right time of the year last season, and I just think our pitching is just too good not to make a run at this. So I'm playoff bound, and I'm going to take a step above the wild card. I think you go win the Western and make that your goal.
Hey, Paul, we were kind of talking about this offseason and how, you know, it started off. Well, really, the whole thing started when they traded Seawald, which, you know, we were just talking to Jerry and Bliss. It looks pretty good. And then you got Dominic Canzone and Rojas in the lineup. And it just seems like that part's kind of coming to fruition for him. And maybe, I don't know, I'm kind of happy for Jerry DePoto, just because I think he took a lot of crap for that kind of stuff, and it's starting to work out. And really, that's all any GM does, right? You get guys you think are going to work out, and sometimes they just don't. And it just seems like this one's really working out, that trade. But obviously, you know, Canzone and Rojas have a lot to prove still.
Yeah, but I like them. I mean, they're good. Just beautiful swings. You know, Canzone, young, you know, huge upside. We'll see with Rojas. I mean, I think he'll be more of a spot starter, obviously, versus righties. But I don't think we knew. You know, even Polanco, I wasn't really sure until I started watching him in spring training. And I went, wow. I go, that is such an upgrade from what we've had in the past. Purely just a build. He looks like a man. He looks like, you know, he's got power and he can do everything with the bat and the glove. So I just look at us athletically when we walk on the field. We look like we know what we're doing now. Julio Rodriguez, my gosh. I mean, you go look at him now and his legs and just how he's filled out. I mean, the guy's 6'4". And we had him on when he raised the 12th flag last year, and we had him on the show. So I had a chance to be next to him, and I just couldn't believe how big he was. I mean, he has become a man. And so that's what I look at this team, is we're just a much more mature, I think, athletic team. And so you don't know what you have until you start really watching the players. And it's the same thing. Look, losing Seawald last year, that was a bummer. But, man, I think we've more than righted that ship with this lineup. We got to get healthy. But when they're all healthy, I think Seawald's going to be an afterthought. And we already know he had hit his ceiling. I mean, he wasn't going to get better as a closer. So, yeah, it's played out. DePoto, you know, if they do what they're capable of doing, you know, he's certainly going to be up for, you know, executive of the year if they make the playoffs.
Hey, Paul, just taking a look at the Seahawks, something Dave and I have been talking about is what they've done in the offseason. And it hasn't been, in terms of name value, it's not anything that fans are going, oh, I can't believe they landed this guy. It's amazing they got this guy. We're kind of looking at him going, okay, there are a lot of one-year deals. It's, you know, not a huge commitment by any stretch, not big money to anybody outside of Leonard Williams. Certainly a big move, but he was already there. So as you sort of look in totality what they've done to this point, are you excited? Are you disappointed? How are you feeling about their offseason so far?
Well, I think at linebacker, it is a huge upgrade. I think Tyrell Dotson, who we got, it's a huge upgrade. Now, it's a different kind of player. I mean, he's given up 20 pounds to what Bobby Wagner did last year. But he's going to hit the guards. And more importantly, he's going to be on coverage with tight ends. He's going to cover guys downfield if we play whatever we play. If we play a Tampa 2, he's capable of running down the middle of the field and cover that. I see him running corner routes with tight ends. And in our league, or our division, we got tough tight ends. I mean, we've got to be able to match up there. So I think Tyrell Dotson's a potential Pro Bowl type of guy. We didn't sign all Pro Bowl guys. I mean, I think Jerome Baker is another guy. I think for our scheme is going to be an upgrade, another high motor, smaller guy. I mean, he's given up at least 25 pounds to what Jordan Brooks probably was weighing. But he's going to be sideline to sideline. He's going to shoot gaps. he's going to be able to cover. So I think I'm excited about that. We got to keep getting some players there for depth. I think at safety, they're good players. I don't think they're Pro Bowl guys. I mean, I like, you know, Kayvon Wallace. I think they're good, but I think that safety spot will be unsettled. I think there's going to be competition there, but I'm not worried about going into the season. I think we've got plenty of depth there. They're all good players. Drawn a blank on the other guy. Rayshon Jenkins, which is interesting because they got him listed ahead of Kayvon Wallace on there. But Kayvon might be more of a hybrid. You know, he could play free safety, more of that third safety as well. But here's the bottom line. You got Kobe Bryant, Kayvon Wallace, Rayshon Jenkins, Julian Love. All four of these guys can cover. You know, again, Julian's a Pro Bowler. The other three, I think they're going to be really good players. They, you know, whether they become Pro Bowlers, I don't know. You're not going to have the whole team with Pro Bowlers. But I think our depth is much improved. And I think going into this draft, it's going to be mostly about our interior offensive line. And that's fine. There's some guys there that I love.
All right, Paul, surely you didn't just say that there's going to be an upgrade at linebacker, because we had Bobby Wagner, who's a Hall of Famer, and, you know, Jordan Brooks. What do you mean, sir? How can you possibly say that?
Well, because, you know, Bobby Wagner had a great career as a Seahawk. I mean, I want to celebrate that someday. He's, you know, probably close to me, a top 10 all-time Seahawk. I know some people think he's the greatest. He's not to me, but he a fantastic football player for us. But what we got from him at the end, we had to upgrade. We need productivity. We need guys who are going to take the football away, who are going to be sideline to sideline, that every play is the last play I'm ever going to play. And that's just not what we got from Bobby. He's a nice player. Hopefully he does well in D.C. But for what we're looking for to get to the playoffs and be a dominant defense, what we have with Tyrell Dotson is an upgrade. And again, he's a chance of a Pro Bowler. We'll see what he does. So I just look at upgrade in coverage, upgrade in what we need to get from tackle to tackle. Is he a better blitzer than Bobby? Probably not. But the stuff that I think we're looking from this inside linebacker crew, I think Tyrell Dotson and Jerome Baker are, I think they're an upgrade for us. Maybe, you know, Jerome Baker, I could argue with Jordan Brooks. I didn't want to lose Jordan, but I truly believe Tyrell Dotson's an upgrade for us.
Hey, as far as the rules go, let's get your take on that, because Dave and I have hammered the hip drop tackle rule that you know, we'll talk to John Schneider about that, but it seems that all the GMs, all the teams are in favor of it being banned. I'm trying to draw a clear distinction between what that is versus a regular tackle, but it's now off the board and it's now illegal. So what is your opinion of that? Is it much ado about nothing, or do you look at it as, oh yeah, that's something that needed to be addressed?
Well, I didn't think it needed to be addressed, and I really hate that they put it on the defensive guys to address it. Why don't you go teach the offensive guys, when they feel somebody grab their waist, roll, go down, teach them how to protect themselves. But once again, they're going to put the, you know, onus on defenders to protect the offensive guys. The reason why I hate the rule, it is so gray. It is so gray. I mean, there are, if you dive, and I'm all about grabbing a waist. If you get a hold of guys' waist, they can't go anywhere. And so if I'm trailing them and I dive on their waist, as soon as I dive on their waist and I'm airborne, my weight at that point, my hips are going to go down. Mm-hmm. Is that a penalty? I don't understand how you're going to rule this. So I can't hold horse collar you, because I can't grab you from your shoulders. So I can't grab you from your waist. So now I'm literally down to your knees to ankle. I just go, the target is getting smaller and smaller. I just think it's confusion. I think it'll be confusion for the refs. It's going to affect a huge play at some point. People are going to go crazy. The players hate it. The fans are going to hate it. But I'm not going to talk about it much after this, Bob, because it's just a rule. And it is what it is. They've decided it, and the league is going to have to figure out, and the coaches are going to figure out how to do this. We did it by trying to lower and move your head out of the way with, you know, the tackles with people coming across the middle. It's not perfect. We still complain. I think this one has a chance to be even more of a, are you kidding me? This isn't the Matrix moment. Because I'm just trying to make a tackle. I'm grabbing you. And there's going to be a lot more calls, I think, than we think. Even though the study said there was, 250 or basically one a game. Look, one a game, a 15-yard penalty in a crucial moment when you're just trying to save a play, there's going to be some people very upset.
Well, and also, you know, like I sent you the DK Metcalf where you thought that could have possibly been a hip drop tackle where, you know, where he dropped Buda Baker. And, you know, you don't want those kind of plays like that to be a problem, to be illegal. So number one, that, Paul. But then the other thing, I've never heard this before, where they said, you know, what are we supposed to do? And I guess the rules committee guy points at the hip drop tackle and says, don't do that. But they're still not saying, what are you supposed to do? We know what not to do. Now, how do you do it? And that's where I think it's really failed, and I think it's really going to be, it's going to be a big problem. I don't think you're going to see anybody stop doing it. And I feel like they went down the wrong path on this one. But yeah, I guess it'll be entertaining, Paul, at least. You know, it'll give me, I always talk about how, like, I like to complain about balls and strikes. You know, that's why I don't want an automated home plate umpire, just because I enjoy that part of it. This will be something, you know, that we'll all enjoy hating, I guess, as far as the rule goes in the NFL.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, look, you have the horse collar and now this. It's pretty much anything from behind when you're, you know, which to me is weird because I'm chasing somebody, right? Yeah. So I'm chasing you and you're telling me I can't do this. I don't know. You know, I, at some point I would love for the league to say, hey, forget about what you can't do. Let's teach these guys what they should do. And let's put it on the offensive guys for once. You know, I guess they could say, well, it can happen on the offensive side too. I'm not sure how, but it's really if I'm chasing somebody or if I'm tackling not in front of them, I can't pull them down. And so if it's fourth and one and you're a runner and you know that you got clear daylight, there is no reason for you to do anything else but go for it, because it's more than likely will be a penalty if they try and stop you and pull you back. That's just weird to me. But, you know, Dave, we didn't used to have unnecessary roughness either. You know, it's football. There is no unnecessary roughness. It's all tough.
Right. Anyway. It's all necessary.
It's super necessary. Yeah. We talked about it, Paul, that at some point it'll be if the ball carrier doesn't see you, can't see you, you move out of their peripheral vision, then it's not going to be legal. You won't be able to tackle from behind. You'll have to be in front of them at some point. It's just, it seems like it's gotten ridiculous. But before we let you go, I wanted to get your thought on the kickoff rule, because that's one I didn't see. I wasn't watching the XFL, so I'm not sure what it looks like. I've read the description, what sounds a little odd to me, but I'm curious, A, have you seen it in the XFL? If not, if so, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I think it'll be weird for us because we're kicking the ball. No one can move until the ball's caught. And I think in the NFL they're going to be 10 yards away, whereas the XFL, I think they were 5 yards away. But don't quote me on that. I know the XFL, they're 5 yards away. Here's what I do like about it. I just like that we're going to see more returns. There's potential for more big explosive plays in the return game. It's gotten so far away from special teams. I mean, last year, you know, 80% of the kicks weren't returned. And so if we're going to have special teams, then let's at least get some of these athletes out in space. So I think that part's good, but it's going to look weird for us the first few times until we get used to it.
He is Paul Moyer. He's with us each and every week. We look forward to these conversations. Paul, Great stuff. Enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy the games over the weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
I appreciate it. Go M's. I am out, but I think you guys are the best.
We think you're the best, Paul. But oh, that's we appreciate the, that.
That's very all nice. Right. Farewell. We appreciate that, Paul.
Thanks, right, Paul.
Thanks,
there you
buddy.
Go. There you go. Paul Moyer with us each and every week. If you missed any of that conversation, it will be available on the podcast page at SeattleSports.com. Well, coming up, you're going to hear him on our Seattle Sports Radio broadcast tonight, and you're going to hear him in person with us right here at the Hatback Bar and Grill. Coming up next, Dave Sims, voice of your Seattle Mariners, will join us here. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Opening day, you're listening to Wyman and Bob live from Hatback Bar and Grill.
We are live at Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And a voice you're going to hear tonight on the broadcast is with us. Get your chair.
Yeah, I know. I got it. I didn't mean
to. Man, just trying to look down on us. Dave Sims.
No, I'm not trying to do that. I had this at NBA height.
In a power sorry. Position.
Yeah, I know. It's Maurice Lucas was what the late great was one of my favorites. I felt like Mo down in the post, give me the ball.
How are you, man?
Doing very well. Good to see you guys. Good to see everybody here. Thanks for coming. Go Mariners, right? There we go.
Yeah, crowd there we go. Crowd right, is man. Filing in.
You'll get a dispensation wearing the Boston gear in here. Thank you very much.
Oh, see what happened there. See
Stand
what happened.
Trident.
There you go.
One thing we've been talking about just amongst players, and we talked to Jerry and Kevin Martinez and everybody, and it just seems to be going into this season a little different level of confidence and urgency and I don't know, the message is a little bit more cohesive, it feels like. Have you noticed anything like
absolutely.
That?
Oh, absolutely. Everybody you talk to, especially the guys returning from last year and that disappointment of missing by a game, they have one chip on this shoulder, two on the right. I mean, they're still really PO'd about it, the fact that they got that close and couldn't do it and know that they can compete with Houston and Texas and beyond that. So now you look at this starting rotation, how can you not be giddy about going into this season? And, you know, Scott, I was over here before I came over. Scott did his daily media session, and he was talking about how impressed he is with the vibe of this club, how they've literally, and this is not word salad, they are together. It's a together mm-hmm. group. I mean, a lot of times you can say, and it's pie in the sky. It's real. I mean, every guy I talk to says the same thing. I was talking to Julio. I know you guys had him on last week. So the confidence level is high. They just got to deliver. And the fact that he said, one of the things that jumped at him, I took a note, they're really committed to putting the ball in play. Because last year, as you know, strikeouts were just a huge problem. And I love Teo, and I love Gino, and JK. Yeah. But this group is different. Having Haniger back as a voice of reason, and Mitch Garver, and I'm seeing it, and I'm having guys tell me that all the time. So it's real, man.
Well, it's kind of interesting for Jerry DePoto. We kind of talked about that with him because, you know, the three guys, Bliss in spring training, looks pretty good.
And yeah, then, I liked him.
Yeah, and then you got Canzone and Rojas coming together. And
yep.
That's Rojos.
Yep.
Who was calling him Rojos? Somebody was calling him Rojos.
Paul.
Rojas.
Did he?
Rojas. I don't need the wrong name put in my head, Bob.
Yeah.
It'll mess me up. But yeah, I mean, you know, he had to be very patient with that, right? And, you know, everybody was upset. And I think that kind of stands out to me of, you know, that those guys are coming together now. They still have a ton to prove.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but it kind of looks like, you know, people can kind of see some of the moves that kind of piss people off starting to sort of come home.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, you're allowed to be a doubting Thomas, but I think this has a chance to be really special. And the other thing, you know, yeah, I live in the East Coast, so I hear from guys over there, and I talk to some of the guys I know from Boston. They like this team, and they're wary of this team. And I talked to, I was on Buster Olney's podcast a week, 10 days ago, and he said, this is an under, maybe a, in some people's minds, a team that's a little bit under the radar, but, you know, don't ignore them. Look out. And how can you ignore them with this pitching, this starting rotation? Knockwood, thank, you know, dear God, keep all these guys healthy. Maybe we have another year where all the starters make all their starts. And then with, what do you call it, Santos and Brash coming back in a couple, 3 weeks, maybe a month, and inside a month. That's a hell of a pitching staff.
Yeah.
When you count the ball. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're talking about Mooney closing at 103. Santos can do 100. Brash, you know, can do, I mean, if you're in the MPH, I mean, we got three monsters at the back end. And then the setup guys, the hold the fort guys, Spire and Saucedo and Thornton, they're really good. They got Voth in there, the guy from here. And who's the other kid? The Snyder
Stanek.
Kid.
Don't forget about Stanek.
And Stanek.
That's a big pickup.
That dude is nasty. I mean, I like him. I went to him. I said, you know, we hated your guts the last couple of years. But, because he came in. He's another guy blowing 100. That's four dudes, man.
Yeah.
He's real, too, and he's excited. And it's interesting to talk to him about how they thought about, you know, this club, you know, from the other side. And same with Garber. So this is a good group, man.
Do you see them doing anything differently in the way of getting the game in motion and manufacturing runs early in the season when we all hear about the Marine Layer and the ball's dying on the warning track? And rather than beating your head against the wall, I'd love to see them play some small balls. Could you
see
them adjusting?
Sign me up for that.
Yeah.
And you have the personnel to do it. Polanco can run. Rojas can run. You know, Demo, when he's in there. Haggerty, when he gets back and gets in there. Julio, although I get a little, it was the other day, I think one of the last games I did on radio down in spring training, I said, well, Julio's not going to run that much. And there he goes, and he got a stolen base. And then Cal, that one time, and Rick and I were having some fun. And, they throw over to first, and Cal's got to really, you know, tip his cap. The dude thinks he's going to go. And then there he goes, and he got it. Yeah. It was amazing. I would love to see small ball. There's nothing wrong with small ball. I know analytics and everything this year, that works. And here's the other thing. A lot of teams aren't very good at defending it. Mm-hmm. Make it happen. You know, put your foot on the accelerator.
Especially when the ball's not carrying early in the season.
Hey, I've been here long enough to know that story real well. Swinging a drive, that's going to be cut right in front of the track.
You got fooled a few times.
I defy anybody to come up there and not get fooled, especially this time of year.
Because
you see pitch location, you see the swing, you hear the impact, and you're thinking, it's gone. And then you start watching the outfielder. He's sprinting back, and all of a sudden he takes 10 steps back in, and boom. Yeah. So, slash and dash. Why not?
We've been talking about, you know, like you always worry about pitching as far as injuries go,
you know,
and in the bullpen, things like that. But as far as like Polanco, he's had injury problems, but he's a tough guy. He'll work through it. And then we were talking about Mitch Haniger, same thing. It's not like he wears down. It's that he has these accidents that happen. So as far as that goes, I feel pretty good about health.
He's been the most unlucky guy in that department the last, five, 6 years?
Yeah.
Name an injury, it's nothing like, turned an ankle, stepping on a bag or something. You know, freaky stuff, getting hit, you know, DeGrom hit him in the face, one in his man region, something. I mean, you can't make that up. And
right.
I was just giving him, doing my rounds, happy opening day. I said, did that bubble wrap that I ordered, did that come for you?
he's a huge piece of this lineup if he can stay healthy. His last year here, 39 home runs, 100 runs driven in, played 157 games.
There you go. That's a magic number. In 2 years, he went 157. The numbers were outstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, and he made the All-Star team the first time he did it.
It's interesting talking about spring training because I've talked to a bunch of different people just in terms of people that have been in the game a long time like you. What do you look for? What tells you? Because everybody dismisses numbers, good or bad. They're it's spring. What is it you're looking for?
A, don't do something stupid and get hurt. How's the swing coming along? Are they getting the ball to the other side? And that's been the theme, as we just talked about. Put the daggone ball in play. And you can put it in play hard, and you can leave the yard going the other way. Everything doesn't have to be home run derby. It's not like that, that softball team that long distance. That's not how the game is played. If you get them, God bless. But what do I look for? Pitchers, everybody can throw a fastball. Secondary stuff. Third level stuff. Are they throwing it for strikes? Hitting. Guys now come to spring training in shape. It's not like when I was a kid growing up and, you'd see a guy, he's got to lose 25 pounds between now and the 1st of April. That ain't happening. That's not happening. So they're coming in shape. It's just a matter of getting the eye. And these hitters, they're on the fastball in the first 2 weeks. We forget how good these athletes are. That sport is damn hard to play. It is really difficult. And when you hear guys talking about, he's throwing 100 miles an hour, I think the last time I was in a batting cage, I saw 86, and it felt like 586. So I'm thinking guys are turning on that pitch, inside fastball. They got his hands in, got the breath. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
So I don't spit at any of these guys, anybody in the major leagues I have, undying respect for these guys that game. Football, you can turn it up and get really angry and physically hit some part of them, or, you know, that whole thing. You can't do it.
It helps you. Yeah.
It does help.
I
played in high school and played a couple years in college. That helps. You do that here, you're done.
Right.
Yeah. And it's such a mind game, but yet with great physicality involved in it. And I think people need to, because I know I did a reassessment. I was like, hey, man, that's why you're superstar failing 70% of the time.
Yeah, right. Do that, you're a Hall of Famer.
There you go. Yeah, I also, you know, it feels like, Dave, this is going to be kind of a rewarding season. I feel like it's setting up to be anyway, just because of the way it ended. Everybody was pissed, you know. I mean, you know, yeah. Cal was pissed, JT was pissed, the fans were, I mean, everybody. Yeah. And it just seemed like we were kind of at a low, and then slowly started building, you know, the Polanco. I thought that trade kind of bolstered things. And then we heard the story about Service going and meeting with his guys, and then we saw the spring they had. I don't know that I've seen a team like this, like the sentiment sort of go from one extreme to the other.
I was listening to you guys after the whole postseason, that whole news conference, and boy, that sounded like this place is on fire. And it has really turned around. Here's the other thing, too. The window of opportunity, we're in that moment right now. Mm-hmm. This is the time to get it done. Not looking for, we got good kids coming down the next couple, 3 years. You got a hell of a team right now, and people know it. Yeah. And this is the time to capitalize. And the main deal is just get in the playoffs, and with that pitching staff, you're going to be in good shape.
Well, yeah, you got to take advantage of these pitchers while they're cheap. Because they're all going to get expensive.
That's a whole other hour conversation.
Yes.
You are correct on that. But that's what I'm saying. Here's our window now. Let's value it. Let's cherish it. Let's enjoy it. And get it done, boys.
Yep. Dave, we love you, man. Can't wait to hear you tonight.
Good to see you, boys. Good to see you guys. All the best. You guys do a great job, man.
Voice of the Seattle Mariners, Dave Sims, our guest. Always great to talk to him. We'll come back, break down the first Mariners lineup of the season. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Hatback Bar and Grill at Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob, live from Hatback Bar and Grill on opening day.
We are live at the Hatback Bar and Grill, which is starting to fill up, Dave. Starting to get packed out here. It looks like I see blue sky out. We don't have a clear view of the outdoors, but it looks like...
A little bit.
It's just, as long as the rain stops, I think people can deal with it.
Lefko almost tipped the entire table over just now.
Me or you?
Was it you blaming it on him?
I blamed it on him.
I was going to say, he doesn't seem to have enough weight to push this table
over.
I got to eat a few more of those cookies first.
Yeah, there you go.
He's eyeballing cookies.
Our girl, Karen.
Karen came through with the cookies, a couple of trays of them here. So,
yes, she did.
And I see the audience eyeballing them.
Yeah, I see that too.
We might have to fight over those.
Yeah. Get your eyes off our cookies. Don't you be looking at my cookies.
Yeah, exactly right. They stay there. But no, we appreciate Karen. Everybody's in a great mood. Everybody's optimistic, feeling good about the Mariners coming into this season. And taking a look at the lineup that's coming out tonight in game one of 162. So long. But it's the biggest, not any surprises per se, other than you look at where Ty France is hitting. So you got J.P. Crawford leading off, followed by Julio, followed by Polanco, Garver, Raleigh, Haniger, Canzone, and then France. And then Rojas bringing up the rear there in the nine hole. But France in the eight spot, part of that is, to me, I'm thinking, okay, are they just giving him a soft landing, like let him just work his way back? You know, yeah, he looked good in spring, but, you know, maybe they want him to get confident, you know, when the game's count and maybe they're just going to work him up. I just feel like eventually we're going to see him further up in the lineup.
You hope so, right? But also it would mean that, you know, somebody maybe is lagging a little bit. But no, I just keep it positive. I mean, Ty France worked really hard this offseason, so I just assume that he would be higher as the season goes on. But I like this. And Josh Rojas, a bit of a surprise, I guess. I mean, not that he's ninth, but you know, he's going to be the third baseman. And, you know, we kind of talked about that trade for Seawald. I know most fans would be really excited to see that whole thing come to fruition. You know, you got Canzone, Rojas, and then Bliss, who did have a pretty good spring training.
He looked really good in spring. And I loved his base running. He was a stolen base threat. He's got some speed. He's a little guy. We walked past him a couple times as he was coming into the complex. And I didn't... not a shot. I didn't realize he was a player at first. I thought, you know, maybe he was somebody working with the team, and somebody called his name, and I was like, wow, that's Ryan. He's a little dude, but he is fast, and he had a nice spring out there. So curious to see what he eventually becomes.
I always appreciate the little guys, too, that they can generate that kind of power. And I'm sorry, Jose Altuve still is, like, amazing to me, but he's, you know, being 5'6", but I know everybody hates him, so yeah. Never mind.
And I think they're lying. I don't think he's 5'6".
I don't think so.
I think he's shorter than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But, yeah, it'll be cool to see this come together. I mean, you know, when Jerry makes a trade like that that's so unpopular, you know, especially with the, you know, it was with the players and then especially with the fans. And, you know, he kind of has to, that's the thing about being a GM. You sort of have to wait, you know, and just hope that you made the right decision, that it's coming together. And so I'm rooting for this one. Josh Rojas, you know, at third base, I mean, I don't know where he is as far as Urias and the competition there, but he sure is a nice kid, a guy that, you know, is going to fit in as far as the chemistry on this team. But, yeah, I just think it's interesting to see those couple of elements there come through in spring, and, you know, maybe that will, in people's minds, justify the Paul Sewald trade at one point.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to see it with Canzone, certainly a guy you expect a little more production out of. He's got more pop than Rojas does. He's a guy that... who looks physically different than he did. We've talked a lot about that. He and Ty had the biggest transformations physically that we saw out there. And the thing that stuck out to me with Canzone, besides him just looking bigger, was just his defense.
Yeah.
That made me feel so much better seeing him in windy Arizona, where I can't remember who we were talking to, where they were saying, like, fly ball is no sure thing out there to catch it because the wind is swirling. Yeah. Might have been Goldsmith. But to see him come in on a ball, diving catch, and in that same game, go back on a ball running up against the fence, and the route he took and just the certainty that he played with, it was sort of like a breath, like I could breathe, like, okay,
yeah,
that looked better. Because limited time last year, it was not fair to judge him on that, but there were just a couple moments defensively last year I watched him and I went, I don't like what I saw there. And that looked different in spring.
Yeah, he had a couple of plays last year. Remember, he was doing the salute thing to the crowd. He made a couple of plays, but he didn't look as certain as he looked in, as you mentioned, in spring training. Another one that he had, I remember there was one where it was right in the sun, and he was having to, you know, block the sun with his mitt. And, like, from the beginning to, you know, when that ball got hit in the air to the time he caught it, there was no extra steps. There was, as you like to say, he was very sure about his route that he should take. And so, yeah, that all looks very good. Had a good spring training at the plate. So
now watch, he'll boot a ball. No, he did. He looked a little different defensively, which for me felt a lot better because, listen, Julio's your best defensive outfielder, and it's not close. And your second best last year, in my opinion, was Jared Kelnick, and I didn't think that was close. I thought he was a very good defense, especially in the corners.
Yeah.
And we'll see what Mitch can do. You know, how often they're going to have him out there. You know, that'll be the other thing I'm curious to see is are they nervous about exposing him too much to potential injury? Are they you know, going to slow play him, or are they just, hey, head first, go in, and if any soreness, we're going to have him sit. And how they're going to protect Mitch, I think, is going to be interesting because of what you talked about. It's not like he's coming up with all these muscle pulls and, you know, I got a hammy, I got a sore shoulder. They're kind of freak accidents.
Totally freak accidents. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I don't see how there's any kind of training that he can do that will make it better for him. Just don't have the accidents that you had. Stop doing that. It's like the hip drop tackle. Don't do that. Okay, whatever that is, don't do it. Really hard to understand that. So, by the way, we had a listener send in a picture of us from opening day last year.
Yes.
And guess who has his trap open, shoving a sandwich into it?
Yeah, because we weren't on air yet, so I was eating before the show started.
Trying to get the whole sandwich in, it looked like, in one bite. That's the way the picture looked.
Yeah, it was like 30 seconds, and Mike, you know, jams the big bite.
It was too cold to eat for longer than a couple seconds. I had to eat quickly.
Yeah, he's just going to see if he could fit that whole sandwich in one bite. He looked like Belushi in Animal House, just going through the food line there. And then, for some reason, I'm wearing bunny ears. I don't remember that, but... Somebody
yeah, I think Karen had something to do with that.
Did she bring
Easter,
those over?
I believe she did.
Okay.
Yeah, but she brings cookies too, so we'll wear the bunny hat or the bunny ears for them.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, opening day is here, so it's time to make a few predictions. We'll get into that coming up live from the Hatback Bar and Grill. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.